Prime Time replay from Money FM 89.3. Focus, hosted by Howie Lim and Bernard Lim, only on Money FM 89.3.
It's Focus, and today's a Thursday. It's a Move. It's a segment where we discuss all things related to transport. And joining us today is Christopher Tan, Senior Transport Correspondent from the Straits Times. Well, today's headline story, the COE supply for the next 3 months is set to shrink quite significantly by 16.5%.
This means that for the August to October period, there'll be 4,904 cars a month for cars, or rather COEs for cars. Chris, thanks for joining us today. Why did the quota shrink by so much for the next quarter, you think? And which category of COE saw the biggest contraction?
I think the main contributor to this would be an increasing awareness among motorists that they can actually use their cars beyond 10 years. And in the first quarter, we saw a record 37,000 people extending the lifespan of their cars by paying the prevailing quota premium. So when they do that, fewer cars get scrapped. Fewer cars get scrapped, fewer COEs are released. So that's what we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm. So would the smaller supply cause COE prices to go up? I think that's a question that everybody's is thinking right now.
Well, I suppose Economics 101 will tell us that small supply means
high demand. High prices.
So now it depends on what demand will be like in the coming months. We've all heard that the economy is slowing down. And then on the back of people extending the lifespan of the cars, it means that replacement demand will also be down.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on how much demand will actually be dampened in the coming months. If, say, demand goes down by 10%, there's still a good chance that prices will still rise because supply has gone down by 20%, right? So it really depends. It's a mixed bag of factors.
Mm. Yesterday also revealed that COEs for small cars hit a four-month low. It had 200 unused COEs from the previous bidding exercise. Why do you think that was, though, Chris?
Yeah, so in June, second bidding, there were about 200 pieces of COEs that were not allocated because of the system did not allow for a certain number of COEs to be allocated for the next qualifying prize because there were more of those qualifying COEs. So to prevent a sort of a, I give 200, but you know the remaining 100 don't get it, they decided to disqualify the whole thing and held the number for this month.
Right.
This is this is how we got that extra 200.
Do you think the trend will continue into the next bidding exercise?
It doesn't happen often. You know, it happens once in a blue moon.
Oh, so
and this
anomalous.
Is one of those blue moons,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're speaking with Christopher Tan, Senior Transport Correspondent from the Straits Times. I'm sure you hear, you've read about all his articles in the papers. Well, do you prefer to hail a taxi off the streets these days or just get one via the app? I mean, you can do a bit of a consensus.
Survey.
Well, it's a bit of a survey here.
I would use the app just because hot, lah. I don't want to walk to the side of the road and stuff.
Well, what about you, Christopher?
Yeah, so people, when you talk to people these days, they say, I'll Grab, right? Maybe months ago, they'll say, I'll take an Uber. Myself, I've always been old school. I go on the street and I hail a cab.
You do that?
Yes, I do that. And I've never had difficulty getting a cab. And in fact, in recent months, I find that once I get out, within a minute or two, I get a cab.
Even at those peak periods and stuff?
Well, lunchtime. I don't take a cab during mornings, I must say. Mostly around lunch.
Okay.
Which is also peakish. Right? And so I wanted to find out, maybe in a quantitative way, whether this was just my own experience or experience of a wider audience. And so we did this survey with the help of 5 interns.
Okay.
And they went out and did about 45 trips in total.
And it sounds like, the street hail cabs is still a good option. Lots
pretty
of people feel the
right?
same way
pretty
you
competitive.
Do. Yeah.
Of course, this is an average of the 45 trips. It all depends on situations. So one Friday evening, the waiting time for a street hail cab was actually quite long, right? You waited like 23 minutes for one.
Yikes.
On the street waiting.
Okay. So I suppose that kind of uncertainty, some people don't want that. They want to sit in their office or a lounge or whatever and wait for the cab on their phone. The waiting time on the phone may not be shorter than actually waiting out on the street.
But
I think
it's
the comfort of that. But if you talk about fares and time itself, you know,
it's
street
comparable still.
Very comparable.
Yeah. What were the other key findings?
The other key finding would be that Gojek is quite cheap.
Maybe not.
So why is that? Well, we are seeing sort of a repeat of the situation when Uber was in town.
Mm-hmm,
Uber
mm-hmm.
was a competitor to Grab, and that's why you saw a price war. But because now Gojek has a smaller fleet than Uber,
mm-hmm.
it's not of a comparable size to Grab.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't able to sort of wage a price war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Grab isn't responding to it.
Right.
So you have a situation where Gojek is cheap, mm-hmm. but you have to wait longer because it has smaller fleet.
Right. True. Actually, a friend of mine who drives a kind of freelance for Gojek told me that the incentives also made it a bit more worthy for some of the drivers because they go by the number of trips that they make.
Exactly. As the newcomer in town, it has to be more aggressive.
Correct. A new point-to-point passenger transport industry bill was tabled in Parliament on July the 8th. If passed, what implications do you think will have on the fares charged by these ride-hailing apps?
Well, we have to know the details of the bill first. It's not passed. It will be debated next month. But I suppose all the discussion so far has been that they want a more level playing field because the rules governing cabs and the rules governing private hire cars are quite different,
mm-hmm.
right? So they want to harmonize these rules. Whether they will be completely harmonized, we don't know. Hopefully, surge pricing will not be so much as high as they can be these
mm-hmm.
days.
Mm-hmm.
And also they want to prevent people from undercutting, offering unusually low fares to penetrate the market or something.
Hmm.
Yeah.
How might this impact taxis though?
I think taxis will stay, as we can see after 5-6 years of private hire coming and the fleet expanding by more than twice. And now there are actually more than 2 times the number of private hire cars versus taxis. And as you can see from the survey, street hail is still comparable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taxis are still around. Their fleet sizes have shrunk, no doubt, because of competition.
Mm-hmm.
That's to be expected. But I believe taxis will still be viable.
And what does all this mean for commuters?
I think better choices and more transparency in fares. Right now, you don't know how your fares are tabulated, right? I mean, for the ride-hailing, for taxis, you can see it's all tabulated there.
Mm-hmm.
But for the private hire cars, you just accept whatever fares the app tells you, right?
Let's talk about what Transport Minister Corbyn once said during Parliament last week, that the government is currently subsidising more than 30% of public transport operations. And then he said, in order to keep subsidies in check, they'd need to hike fares. Do you think a much larger hike then would be on the cards?
Quite possibly. I mean, subsidies in public transport is unavoidable, right? You either subsidise upfront or you subsidise in the operating end. So far, in the last 20, 30 years, the government has been subsidising, or rather taxpayers have been subsidising upfront. That means they build infrastructure, they put in the systems, they buy the first set of operating assets, and then the operators will run the system and they collect fares. The fares are supposed to them defray whatever operating cost there is,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? Including the next set of operating assets. So I think the larger question is why did the model break down?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that we now have to have a different model.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that we have to subsidize operating costs more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we should understand that subsidies are not bad per se. You need to have subsidies for public transport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Mr. Corsa mentioned, said that recently Public Transport Council fare adjustments were not implemented to the full extent of what the formula allowed. I mean, why is this the case?
Well, if you remember, in the last few years, train services were not up to par. In fact, they were quite bad. From 2011 right up to 2017, I would say they was going through a very difficult period. You know, assets were run down. They had to be replaced. So services were not up to par. And I suppose that was one reason why the PTC did not effect the full fare increase that the formula allowed.
He also said that the transport system will have to be funded by either taxpayers or commuters, and the key is to strike a balance between the two. Which party do you think, though, Chris, should bear more of the cost, given that taxpayers are also commuters, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think, but if you have to realize that taxpayers, those people who pay taxes here, tend to be the wealthier bunch, right? And I think there's nothing wrong with them subsidizing people who rely on the trains and buses for their commutes.
Sounds good, Christopher Tan. Christopher Tan is Senior Transport Correspondent from The Straits Times. This has been Move. Thanks for joining us today, Chris.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.